Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Okay, I am Chris from the Postmarks.
I'm Tim from the Postmarks.
So we've got your bio right here. I'm not going to let you read it, but I'm kind of interested in revisionist history because anybody can go on the internet and read, oh, well, they were in bands before. And so I want a little bit of that, but you can also lie completely if you want to.
History. Like how I started off with the Eagles?
Yeah. So yeah, why don't you guys do, yeah, go ahead. You guys go for it.
Well, I knew Glenn Frey back now.
The Eagles.
Yes.
Yes, you are responsible. Take It to the Limit was actually Take It Somewhere Near the Limit.
Yeah.
And you said
slightly below.
You said
limit.
It was too weak a song and we really have to make it ballsier.
Yeah, go to 11.
Yeah, that was it. This is not a new band. You know, it's everybody thinks, oh, well, here they are and they're getting 8.25s in Pitchfork and blah, blah, blah. That one of the things that you did that is very different is you concentrated on making the music first, where most bands say, oh, well, we'll throw something out. They will throw some demos. We'll tour the living you know what out of it. And then we'll go back and make a good record. You first and foremost wanted to make a good record and then do the touring afterwards, correct?
Yeah, I would say that's right.
We weren't even going to tour.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a little bit out of necessity. You know, I mean, it's not revisionist at this point because we said it like plenty of times before. I think part of it was because of where we were based, you know, being in South Florida, which is this, wart off the rest of the country just kind of hanging off. But, you know, I mean, it's just like, you know, we don't, because we're kind of isolated, it's almost like the land that time forgot down there. And, you know, you don't have A&R people and all of that stuff coming in. So you have to, kind of concentrate on the things that you can control. Like making a good record.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, I've said it in plenty of the interviews before. It's almost like pretending we were on a desert island down there and kind of, you know, trying to make the best flair to let people know we were alive.
Tim, the boys discovered you at, it's well documented, but I'm going to, you were discovered in an open mic night. What were you singing?
I did a White Stripes cover. I played a song about my cat.
So graphic designers meet chemistry major at FAU, but you still thought about joining these guys, even though you knew that these guys had some musical pedigree. You still thought, chemistry, rock and roll. Did you not think about it a little bit?
Chris scared me. He was all businesslike and, kind of, okay, let's
intense.
Get to work. And
yeah, it's a P.T. Barnum kind of, like, we can do this and this and this and this.
And it's destiny. And
that does scare girls when you actually are, and the worst part is when you're not full of it, right? But you're good. It just doesn't work when you're that slick, right?
I think it was over a glass of wine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could have been taken either way, but
but I also was kind of, I didn't want to be stuck in a mold. I consider myself an artist in some sense, and I didn't want someone dictating to me what I was going to be doing. I wanted to have some say, and I wasn't going to get into something where I was going to be a puppet.
I can't blame you. Do you ever think you'll finish those four chemistry classes now that this is actually taking off?
I ended up finishing the degree.
Memoirs at the End of the World really is a terrific record from track one. In fact, track one, just the second I popped it in, I was like, whoa, hit there, and I immediately played it. You know that this is going to be a major next step from the first two records. At least I think you do. Tell me how you conceived the record, because you did the first record. You did the covers. And then here's this thing. Did you turn around and say, okay, we got some buzz. We were real, it's starting to happen. And now this is the record. Or did you just go in and say, you know what? We're making another good record.
Tim and I have had these discussions before. And it's like, what you referred to with John and I, we have been kind of slogging away doing this for a while. So I wasn't too afraid of, like, the difficult second album, or the sophomore slump or anything.
The sophomore problem.
Because to us, it was just another body of music. But, there was a lot of thought, I think, put into it. After we got done, there was some of the genesis of the album started. Like, after we got done doing a photo shoot for the first album, we had discussed, like, okay, where are we going to go with this next? And we wanted to kind of go, I think, a little darker, a little more nighttimey, a little more kind of, crusty and not so kind of
crusty.
Yes.
That's the title of your, you know, when you do a B-side, you need to write a song called Krusty for one of the B-sides.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was something where we wanted just something a little, you know, just overall a little moodier, a little more like kind of intense and atmospheric than the first one. And the By the Numbers, like, covers album was, originally when that was conceived, it wasn't meant to be put out as a release. But, you know, we were just kind of going to release the singles like each month and just, you know, kind of do it to tide the year over until we were getting around to putting out Memoirs. And they started coming out like really good. So like, okay, you know, it makes sense to kind of like bundle the whole thing up and put it out. So that was almost like kind of album 1.5. But I think if you listen to By the Numbers, you can start to see where this is kind of going. And I think that was important for us to kind of like, you know, I always like kind of tipping the hat a little bit as to where the direction of things are going. And I wouldn't be surprised on the next album that there are moments on here to kind of hint, you know, where this is going to go.
One of my favorite things, my favorite music, the melody belies the lyrics, where the songs sound pretty damn poppy. And then you listen to the lyrics and you're like, I want to die. I'm happy as all hell, but I want to die.
Yeah, that's something that I think we work like really closely on, just to make sure that it all kind of, you know, ties together into something that's multifaceted, you know, and that it's not just strictly about the arrangements or the songs or the lyrics, but they all like kind of work in tandem together, you know.
So your bio says that you were, quote, discovered by Andy Chase. But now, did you send him a rough demo? Is that what the scoop is? Did you admire him?
I think we were sleeping
him?
On his doorstep, you know, and that's how he kind of discovered. He tripped over us.
So you admired his work and said this would be a good guy to get us to the next place. So what the heck will accost him?
Yeah, well, it was a case like when we did the first album. I mean, all the albums we've done at home, you know, I mean, they've been done, you know, pretty much in our bedroom studio. And some of the work I've done in the past, you know, I think if we were trying to get the attention of an indie label, we wanted somebody that was going to come in to mix it that would add a name to, like, the whole thing. You know, and Andy was on a very short list of, like, people to kind of contact. I had a connection to him, to the last band that I was in, that we had kind of discussed maybe him mixing some of the tracks of that album. And for one reason or another, it got shot down. So I kind of filed that in the back of my mind. And yeah, no, I've been a fan of Ivy, been a fan of Tahiti 80. And, you know, I thought it would be a good matchup. And I don't think we expected the kind of reaction from him that we got, you know.
And next thing you know, you're on his label.
Yeah, yeah. So
which is not a bad deal, right?
No, not at all.
Well, up to that point, he was not signing bands. He was just putting out his own stuff, and the relationship just developed to the point they said, "Hey, I'll put your record out."
Lollapalooza. Who were you surrounded by? Did you feel like in the right place?
Well, I mean, I've got my story with it. It was interesting, you know, because we
interesting. What a
we were on the same one. Stage with the Wailers
and Juliette Lewis.
And Juliette Lewis. Yeah, she showed up and she was bopping her head and she winked at me like during I think it was during the set or the sound check. I don't remember.
Was that? Are you sure you didn't imagine that?
No,
I sure
did,
wasn't
I did not.
You sure it wasn't a twitch?
It might have been. But
she has a nervous tick. Did anybody tell you that?
Yeah, the Wailers were there and they were. I think they were late because they were supposed to sound check before us or something like that, and they got pulled over on the way in. And I didn't realize this on these big tour situations, especially for them, that, you know, if they get pulled over with all the weed that they have in the bus, the driver has to take the fall.
What?
So it was the bus driver who, you know, got arrested, you know, for that, so the Wailers could continue on to Lollapalooza. So they showed up. You know, and we were doing our sound check, and then we went over to, I guess, the artist area to kind of, you know, go get something to eat. And I feel this, like, huge hand on my shoulder. It kind of grabs me, and I turn around, and it's the drummer from the Wailers. And he actually kind of said that, you know, he liked my guitar playing and my tone. And I was just like, wow, okay, that's my moment.
Didn't he just say nice tone?
Yeah, it was something like that, you know.
Nice tone, just, man.
Yeah. The other thing, too, that I found was really my biggest, I think, rock and roll moment so far was that, you know, obviously it's in the middle of Grant Park, like down there. And we were sound checking. It might have been like 10 in the morning, like on a Sunday when it was going on. And there was nobody there. But, you know, I have a Fender Twin, which is a humongously like loud amp that I never get to turn up to any degree and like actually utilize it to its full potential. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to take this chance to kind of do this. And I just cranked it up and just kind of wailed on it and just let it feed back and like ring all over like downtown Chicago.
No, Mayor Daley showed up from the dead and came back.
Yes, yeah.
Said, get out of my city or I'll have the guys kill you.
Yeah, so that was a nice moment there.
Pick a couple of songs on Memoirs and give me a groovy story behind it. True or false?
Thorn in Your Side was an interesting one that I woke up at 3 a.m. and had the whole string intro in my head. And I had to rush over to my studio and kind of just put the idea down. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I don't know what I'm going to do with this. And it just kind of sat there. And then I'm like, you know, I went back a couple days later, listened to it, and I was just like, oh, that's really kind of compelling. Something needs to be done with this. And I just played it, sat down with a guitar, and then once it was done, just let it see where it kind of took me. And the rest of it just kind of fell into place, you know. And those kind of moments don't happen that often, so I don't know if it was just floating through the universe and I was, you know, wide open to receive that night, but there it is.
I guess what I'm curious about is you obviously start with the tune. And you mentioned in this case you did come up with the sounds, but more often than not, I would imagine you start with a pop song and then embellish and say, okay, we want this to be more than a typical pop song. Now, you know, let's make, and I'm not saying that's the trademark of the band, but it certainly is one of the things that makes a lot of your music stand out is that, yes, there's very glossy, beautiful stuff going on, but then when you least expect it, and it happened last night towards the end of the set, it was song one before the last one where my friend who was with me turned to me and said, now, wait a minute, you know. So that's kind of what makes it fun is there's always surprises.
Yeah, my credo is it is about the song, you know. And if you're going to sit there with an acoustic guitar, it kind of starts that way. And I think if you can get it to work in that format, anything else is like icing on the cake, you know. So you build from there and, you know, I mean, I just want us to try to, you know, attempt to write songs that are timeless and kind of do it in a way that I don't feel like people are doing too often anymore.
You know, buzz is great if used properly.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, like right now. I think, you know, if it was 10 years ago, you know, I would be able to quit my day job. You know, I mean, just based on the buzz that we kind of have like right now. Perception reality. Obviously, you know, the music industry has dramatically changed there.
But everybody thinks you've sold a million. Right now, if you go by buzz, you've sold a million records and you guys are living, you know, in the in Robin Gibbs' old house.
Yeah, well, you know, they haven't filmed any Cribs episodes down in Pompano, so I don't know. That's the reality of it, like right now. But I mean, you know, in terms of it's there are good elements to it. You know, it empowers people to get the buzz out there and kind of, you know, get it created and keep it going. But it comes time consuming and it's just like a little bit narcissistic, I think.
This is from, and I'm going to pronounce. I actually responded to her so this morning because I just had to because it was fun. This is from Lindsay Heineman from a blog.
Oh, that one. Okay, we know.
Oh,
this.
Do you know that one?
Oh, we know this one.
Oh,
can I read just a little bit?
Really
yes.
To put it simply, the postmarks are a bit boring. I should do Casey Kasem here. Surely the band's previous attempts have been met with praise and high acclaim. They undoubtedly have a... what's my favorite? While the postmarks' lack of focus and instrumental overkill makes Memoirs at the End of the Earth fall short of success, lead singer Tim, yes, she's female's detached hesitant vocals are another liability. I'll look at you straight as I say that. Her voice does not fit alongside the drama and gaudy panache. You should change the name of the band to Gaudy Panache.
Yeah.
Maybe the band thought the balance between orchestral might and meek vocals would be pleasing. Perhaps this album would have been a success with a more selective ear behind the mixing table. Oh, I love that. Slap, slap, Andy Chase. It gets tiresome before you know it. Now, I want to read you what I wrote this morning to her.
Yes, please.
And she doesn't know who I am, but hopefully she'll find a way to look it up. Congratulations, you are about to get national fame for your moronic review, since I will be reading it in its entirety to the band while interviewing them for a syndicated radio show. You are the perfect example of why blogging is a blessing and a curse. Anyone with no major musical reviewing acumen can now get the word out to everyone. Cheers, DTM.
Well, thank you.
Seriously,
I come upon these all the time.
Yeah. And actually, you.
Well,
Tim
and I had a discussion this morning about this, and I think the quote is very applicable here. Okay, just because you have a whip and a chair, it doesn't make you a lion tamer.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, but this
these things empower people to go
She's
out.
She's
an
18-year-old who hates life
this,
in general.
This is exceptional, though. The album sounds like the band discovered the works of Henry Mancini one night and a leap in of glassy-eyed admiration, she took English, designed to mash up Moon River, the Pink Panther theme, and the soundtrack to the Audrey Hepburn, Cary Grant thriller Charade into a 13-song extravaganza.
Now, I will give her credit that she actually did know those things and, you know, whether that was research.
She looked them up
because, man, I write for a living and I don't write like that. Jeez, yeah. Louise, kids.
You know.
Anyway, I did that not to get us pissed off, but just to make a point about Buzz. All right. And I have to do this, Tim. Your picture has been all over the New York Post with the bangs and the cool outfit. So are you comfortable with your new role as a fashion icon?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you'll take it?
If Lady Gaga can do it, then anyone can do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Wow. Ouch.
Wow. Whoa. So when Project Runway calls for you to be one of the judges, you're there?
I don't like judging.
Okay, so I was going to say, because you'd be too fair and too nice.
Yeah.
I really hate your outfit, but I don't want to send you home.
Yeah.
We do a thing, we've done this with over 300 bands, called a musical sandwich. And it is two of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.